Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to the SmackDown Review. I'm Michael Hamsworth and I'm joined by my fellow daddy boy, Michael Sidgwick, to discuss everything that happened on this week's episode of Friday Night SmackDown. But first, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review SmackDown, but also Monday Night Raw, NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We also have wrestler interviews, have roundtable discussions, and have a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. First couple of programming notes, you will notice the sound quality is not what you're used to from us at What Culture Towers. There is a work going on today. If you've already listened to the Rampage review, and why would you have not, you'll know this, but that explains why myself and Sidgwick sound a bit more pandemic-y than usual for today's recordings. And of course, Adam Wilborn is off sick, get well soon. But to SmackDown, Sidg. Last week's, of course, for various reasons, not just the Sammy and the Bloodline stuff, but was earning some raves across the board. Next week's is the season premiere, which stands also as the go-home to this week's Extreme Rules, which is also, getting some largely positive praise for the card. What did you make of this kind of in-the-middle effort? Or have I just spoiled your take?
You just spoiled the take. I tell you what. You know what I'm like on these podcasts with WWE? More often than not, I'm a bit of a miserable bastard. There are certain ways with which they tell their stories that I will just never like, and I will remind you why I don't like them. However, there was something on the show that absolutely ruled, and it was so good, and I am really looking forward to putting that particular bit over.
And we will get into what this week's QR code revealed later
in the show. Yes.
But we open with, I think, what most people are agreeing is currently the highlight of SmackDown, and indeed WWE, and in many ways, all of wrestling, perhaps. It was Sami Zayn with Solo Sikoa.
Many people are saying it.
And enough are against Madcap Moss and Ricochet. It was your sort of, I'm not going to do Wilborn's usual play-by-play, but it was very much a case of trying to exhibit the immediate chemistry that exists between Solo Sikoa and Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn as this bothersome little scamp, but he can obviously goo. And Solo Sikoa, who thus far, I would suggest, has been built quite successfully in this enforcer role. It's not so much about what he's doing, and we know through sort of extensively seeing him on 2.0 that he was a level above some of those developmental prospects, but they're making him almost immediately, well, kind of a Triple H guy. Hard-hitting, big impact stuff. They don't mind leaning on the story elements of this. Ricochet was able to be like the big bumping guy for this. He was getting bumped by Madcap Moss, like Madcap Moss was throwing him around. So in effect, you had kind of like perfect opponents to sell the Sami and Sikoa story, which of course led to the finish, where Moss was kind of the sacrificial lamb for this one, where Solo Sikoa got that big, where it's like a swinging you in argue, but they want you to see it as a rock bottom because of all the bloodline links and things like that. Sami Zayn gets to kind of run interference to get them there. And Moss and Ricochet were there to just be lined up to be losers as they kickstart this next chapter of the Bloodline story off the back of last week's. As far as, week one in this latest development, I thought this was a success. But I think as a result, people probably sleep on what was some pretty impressive work here. Madcap Moss is a jacked up hoss of a guy, has got this awesome pace and fire up that he does. And Ricochet is clearly, like, I don't know if there's going to be a push that develops off this, but it's clearly just back in the mood working on the Triple H. So, personally for me, I thought this was, like, a multifarious success story, even if it was one of the matches that nobody will think about again in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I mean, it was good, not blow away great. I would like to see Ricochet be Ricochet. Mm. I think his contribution to the GIF sphere was kind of unforgettable, so much so that anything less than him blowing your nipples off your tits, not good enough for a performer of his caliber, and especially when he works a style that he does. You don't want to just do it now with him for ages. While he's still in his physical athletic prime, you kind of want him to do more than stuff like this. But ultimately, look, people need to lose, and stories must be advanced with the most important players. And Sami Zayn is one of the most important players in the entire promotion right now. So I will take that for now. But as the weeks and months go by, I would still like to see Ricochet be Ricochet again. I think it presents a unique booking challenge for Triple H, to not book within the pretty soapy and at times contrived parameters of WWE TV and get an act like Ricochet over as a pro wrestler. And, you know, you can say pro wrestling as much as you like on your TV, and if you're not doing enough with your gifted pro wrestlers on television, then I'm sorry, the words ring hollow. So I will let one that, I will let that one play out. But ultimately, this was a neat, pretty unspectacular, but very necessary beat in this story with Sami Zayn. He's now having to be a more credible player. He's not just this pissant who's trying to get in. He's not just this sacrificial lamb for the bloodline. He's not just getting strung along. He's potentially like a game changer to solidify this faction and to help the bloodline maintain their stranglehold over WWE. So as part of that, you kind of need to take him seriously when the bell rings again. And I think this did a very good job of that. Ironically, he spent much of the match bumping and feeding, and Solo Sikoa is the difference maker, the sort of the strategist on the outside who knows how to get it done. But again, that just adds more nuance to the story. The idea that one day Sami Zayn is going to be an absolutely massive babyface, so you don't really want to boo him. So you can boo Sikoa, and you can watch Sami Zayn rediscover that form, and him bumping and feeding, despite it not being my favorite kind of match structure for Madcap Moss, that he really looked up for it. There's a kind of a flailing quality with WWE TV matches, and particularly guys who are nearer the end of their physical primes than the beginning. There is a mechanical element that can never get past, and WWE's all too ready to sort of enable that. But I just thought there was something about Sami Zayn's performance here where he's zipping himself about, he's making Madcap look like this propulsive beast of a guy. Made it look like the result was really in doubt before Sikoa made the difference. And he just looked bang up for it. He looks like he's, to use a total football manager cliche, he's literally firing on all cylinders at the minute. I wasn't that high on the AJ Styles, but that's because it's a default Raw match that has to go 20 minutes. Mm. This is more what I want to see of Sami Zayn in the ring. I thought he balanced the act of, I'm turning babyface one day, but in the meantime, I have to put over babyfaces when I work them. Like, genuinely, masterfully, he's just one of the best, if not the best, performers in the game at the minute.
Well, we'll keep it on Sami Zayn. And I think two areas that I think people are probably, well, hopefully quite excited to hear us talk about because of the enthusiasm that these two segments separately were greeted on throughout the show. Because this was kind of all we got of the bloodline in terms of the in-ring. So there was two backstage segments that were worthwhile to note in terms of the Sami Zayn development. One came immediately after the match. Obviously, Zayn and Solo Sikoa heading back after their success. And Jey Uso is there opening the door to the bloodline locker room. He's buzzing for Solo Sikoa, but he still refuses to give any credit to Sami Zayn. But he will say that this is, he's always on his last warning as far as Jey Uso is concerned. You must never put the bloodline in danger. He's still livid that he has to welcome him in, but at least for now he's playing ball because Roman has told him so. Sami Zayn, tremendous here in, as if to say, well, sorry, take that up with your manager because he seems like me more than likes you these days. You could hear the crowd reacting to that as well. And they all go into obviously their locker room together. Jay's furious. And then later on, which I think is the added thing that I think people, again, you know, feel, and I would include myself in this, are starting to trust the process because the process under Triple H is gradually revealing itself. We'll get to Kevin Owens being on this show later on and what he was directly involved in. But they didn't waste an opportunity to give the people what they want, which are these little teases and these little reminders that from a distance, Kevin Owens is not blind to the developments going on with his former best friend. And he sees what we're all watching too. And he feels the feelings that we're all feeling for Sami. And he's had this little interaction with Drew McIntyre and Johnny Gargano, but then he bumps into Sami Zayn, who's wearing the obviously Bloodline gear, and Owens just references that he needs his new shirt. He kind of looks down at him with a bit of a sense of disappointment. That was all it was this week because, well, it's October. And if this all heads where we speculate it will, there is a long way to go, and there are a number of big matches with which you can explore this dynamic. But I thought, like, why not? They're in a position where they were using Owens for the absolutely huge bet that he got on this broadcast. So it would be almost wasteful to WWE not to play with our emotions as a fan base, considering that we all want to manifest this.
Yeah, again, the only word, and this is incredible. Like, I honestly think at times I preferred Vince's WWE to Triple H's just because everyone was licking his ass. The word I'm going to use is masterful here. Masterful. Yeah. So the idea is, and there are actually two of them, you want to slowly pile the sympathy on Sami Zayn, because one day, unless they completely have misread the room or they are totally incompetent, and increasingly I don't think either of those things is true, they want to do two things at once. This thing has got a dual remit. One, you want to very slowly turn Sami Zayn babyface, or at least make him do these really funny Sami Zayn things with which he endears himself to the crowd. But to do that, you kind of have to have him be the dickhead to Jey Uso at the same time.
Yeah.
I'm getting glimpses of both sides of this Sami Zayn character, the present and the future. And I think that just, again, the word is a masterful balance of both. And the thing is as well, it works so well because he's kind of a dickhead, this character. He's almost the worst kind of dickhead, like a sycophantic dickhead who doesn't realize that the more he does this, like, he deserves it. Mm-hmm. He keeps poking the bear, that is Jey Uso, over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And on some level, if he costs something for the Bloodline or he takes it too far, Jey Uso's well within his rights to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
And yet I will be crushed when that happens. So I don't know how they're doing this, but it's just the gift that is Sami Zayn's performance. And if anything, his desperation is so palpable, almost to be kind of cringeworthy. It's like the cringe comedy thing of, oh, don't keep doing this to Jey Uso. You're so close to just being all the way in. He's kind of being his own worst enemy. That, ironically, like, he's going to be so much more sympathetic when it all blows up in his face because he's just so desperate to be this kind of character and to be sort of in this group. I don't really know how to articulate it properly, but basically, the bigger, the more desperate dickhead he is, and bear in mind how much I hate this in WWE babyfaces ordinarily, the more I'm going to really, really sympathize with and just feel devastated for him when it doesn't happen. They've got something like remarkable with the Sami Zayn character, and it's, do you show the glimpse of the babyface that's coming, or do you just make him even more of a tosser realistically? And it's kind of, why not both? This is what gets him over, and it really it's like when you just see someone just desperate and desperate and desperate to succeed, even if that sometimes manifests as him just taking the piss and doing things that ordinarily should see that he gets what's coming to him, it's really just going to be devastating instead.
I think the fact now that we're on the verge of a War Games that surely has to feature the Bloodline on one side, and then, for example, the Royal Rumble or the Elimination Chamber, where typically title defences are won and lost and decided, those feel like ideal situations where Sami Zayn will be made to choose. And to your point about when it is that Jey Uso finally snaps and smacks him in the head, you could visualise that happening in War Games because Sami hesitates attacking Owens. And there's a seed of doubt for a second about whether or not Zayn has it in him to beat up his own friend. So then Jey Uso is within his rights to slap him upside the head.
Yeah.
For example, Roman doesn't see that. So he's just angry with Jey or something, you know, like something like
that. Yeah. There's loads that can do with this. There's loads. Yeah. Do you remember when it was rumored that Kevin Owens was going to leave and he'd put the coordinates to Mount Rushmore on his Twitter? And then shortly following that, Sami Zayn was said to have been nearing the end date of his contract. And fast forward, and you think, and you would say to that person who was just watching those developments on, oh, by the way, Kevin and Sami both resigned with WWE, but guess what? It was 1,000,000% the absolute best moves in their career. Crazy, just crazy.
It's more to add on to our wacky end of year contents as like an all time wacky 2022, isn't it?
Yeah,
you would never have seen coming. Speaking of things that you absolutely will see coming, it was within their Karrion Kross's Derek video message to Drew McIntyre that we got the first of our now requisite White Rabbit Fiend teasers. This was with a QR. There was later somebody holding up a sign in the crowd behind Michael Cole and Corey Graves. But this was the QR that sent people on another White Rabbit Fiend journey. I'll run down, like, the Karrion Kross thing was just, I'm going to beat your ass, Extreme Rules, but through Derek Mason.
Come back to me on it, though. Okay.
But the Fiend teasers, the White Rabbit teasers, for anybody that, and this is not my sleuthing, this is the sleuthing of millions of people on Twitter. It's just whoever, it becomes this little arms race. But because of when SmackDown airs in America, by the time you're waking up on Saturday morning, UK time, people have already done the 15 tweet threads. So this is from nobody in particular. This is just a sort of a collection of the various things that this week's teasers showed up. So Karrion Kross is doing his bit about how he's going to beat Drew McIntyre, and a QR code flashes up. Now, that in itself is noteworthy, I think, because there has been some speculation that it is more than just Bray Wyatt. It is, in fact, perhaps a gang of all these oddballs that Triple H just randomly, or seemingly randomly, returned to television. And the QR code flashes up, and it leads to a link, which is www.com/1911. That video has some Morse code, which apparently, you know, you can decode some sort of hidden audio message from Wyatt himself. But at the link, the 1911 link, there is shots of Porky Pig, a cartoon wolf, and a slaughterhouse, which of course people are leading to the various sort of characters within the Firefly Funhouse and all these sort of references, and how Bray would neg himself because WWE negged him, like Vince McMahon would neg him as well. The White Rabbit icon within this Porky Pig video can be hovered over, revealing TS_S10E6, which, I mean, fair play to these nerds, because they're doing the work that I certainly wouldn't do. They've realised that is one of those episode title codes for an episode of The Simpsons, and it was the episode where Homer, of course, makes that green juice that's giving people all these sort of, like, hippie freakouts, and Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit plays within that episode, of course. It was, I forget the title of the episode, but you know the one, I've got that.
Yeah.
And so rediscovers his roots because he wants to bond with his mum. They're always very serious and sincere episodes, aren't they? But that was all the more for Bray. The 1911 number as well was also tied to that, when he was dressed as the Mad Hatter in the Firefly Funhouse that time, there's a 1911 tag on his hat that was never acknowledged at the time because they were just tossed off away all the time. So I'm guessing it's something they're going back to.
Imagine if you put this much effort into things that matter.
I know.
Imagine that.
It's the, because the Morse code, to go back to the Morse code, somebody had spelled out Azazel Reborn, which was a biblical character. And Azazel is, amongst a number of other hypothetical things, the big takeaway that people were into was Azazel was the leader of some rebellious angels, which again sort of suggests that maybe this is part of some sort of stable. What else was there? Oh, I saw something over the weekend where now, if you ring White Rabbit's records and say, feed your head, which was the message, of course, with the White Rabbit, and some people recording this actually did this, and they got a big pop out of it, I suppose. The member of staff at White Rabbit Records said, let him in, and then hung up. What a nice amount of effort everybody has made so that everybody can really enjoy this. You know, it's always going to be for Bray, so at some point the bell's got to ring. But yeah. I can't lie, I'm enjoying watching, like, after the fact, people find all this stuff. So I can scroll down and go, oh, yeah, it turns out the White Rabbit led to the White Rabbit. I'm not doing backflips or anything, but I genuinely admire the work. And you said you had something to add on the fact that all of this factored into a Karrion Kross vignette as well.
I've got nothing to add on how this impacted the Karrion Kross thing, because ultimately I know Bray Wyatt's coming at this point, and it's not my kind of thing. And I will wait and see what happens, because after literal nine years of failure with Bray Wyatt, a half-decent, well-thought-out viral marketing campaign is not going to convince me yet, until it happens, that it's going to go any different.
It's spooky CM Punk, but unfortunately, Bray Wyatt may never be CM Punk in terms of the in-ring return.
It's never going to be CM Punk. Can I just shock you?
Yes.
I don't know why he's recording them, for now, till the next one's held in America. I quite like these Karrion Kross backstage vignettes, you know.
Yeah,
I think he cuts a very intimidating presence. I think the verbiage isn't too stupid in wordplay. I honestly think it's significantly better produced and less hokey than it ever was in NXT Black and Gold. He just comes across in these backstage segments as something approaching the real deal. Again, the bell rings on Kross. just as it does with Bray. And those elbow, those forearms to the back of the neck or to the upper, they look more like a massage than something that could actually really hurt someone. So the bell will ring eventually on Karrion Kross. But in terms of the presentation of the character, like, it's, he's good. He is very, very good in these. And WWE so far, apart from the stupid black and white thing, with the backstage things at least, they are getting out of their own way and just getting to the point. He's got away with a threat. It doesn't feel too hokey or stupid. I'm into them. I'm shockingly quite into them.
I thought it was noteworthy as well. Obviously, the fireball angle was... And like I said this on the review last week, they all showed good instincts to crack.
Yeah, Drew out. Especially.
Yeah, in that
segment. Who knows his worth?
The black and white getting abandoned after a week might even suggest that the... Like, we know Triple H is more online than he would ever like to admit. But can that power sometimes be used for good? Because they dropped the black and white thing after a week when it was rounded on. So maybe that's even them picking up that feedback and thinking, yeah, that's not a hill worth dying on, is keeping the screen black and white. And on Drew, we go to him next. There's Austin Theory's giving him grief in a backstage segment. So Drew's like, I'm going to kick your ass right now. Before they can even have and complete this impromptu match, it gets interrupted by the Alpha Academy, who run down to help Austin Theory out against Drew McIntyre for whatever reason. This is hardly Survivor Series cross brand, can only happen once a year type stuff. It all does feel, to be fair to them, as we kind of gave certain leeway to AEW, we should mention here, of course, and you know, thoughts to everybody still suffering the impact of the hurricane in America, but there was reports that SmackDown was similar to Dynamite and Rampage, having to be ever slightly rejigged, and certain talent weren't available and certain talent were due to the hurricane and wrestlers living in Florida and whatnot. So this, like, half random, half not, because why would you reject an Owens in Canada pop? But this half random, half not arrangement of superstars being used twice on SmackDown might have had something to do with that. But sure enough, the Alpha Academy and Theory are beating down Drew, and Johnny Gargano and Kevin Owens continue their relationship from Raw and come and make the save, which sets up our impromptu main event. Thoughts on any and all of this?
Right. I'm going to try and choose my words very carefully, because it's important to do so when it pertains to like a natural disaster and all the rest of it, right? I'm sorry, but I don't know how it is possible that as soon as a wrestling booker is confronted with a moderate, I would say, loss of personnel, there were still loads of stars on the show, Roman was never going to be on it, etc., etc. I don't know why the take is prevailing that, right, okay, well, we're short of three or four people than we thought we were going to be. We're going to have to do some absolute garbage WWE stuff on the show. Sorry. I just don't know how that connection... Oh, they can do rubbish, because I understand, like, phoning it in or not doing anything exciting or making a match 5 or 10 minutes longer than it needs to be across a few segments. I can't get, and I refuse to get, this idea that a booker faced with the odd people not being able to attend the show automatically turns the show into like a really horrible WWE mess of cliches and fake contrivances. Just that does not wash with me at all. Because the idea here is that what, including entrances, the backstage segment that set it up, the in-ring action, the unceremonious end to the in-ring action and the first match, 40 minutes of the show just weren't accounted for what was going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You know what I mean? Just what was going to happen. An impromptu match that is very conveniently arrived at with a backstage segment that just happened to happen that ended in disqualification, the ramifications for which, just on a general level, have not even been considered. So you could just theoretically, if you're a cowardly heel who doesn't want to wrestle, which is still a ridiculous trope that does happen in this organization, you can just do it all the time because there's no repercussions. Setting up a fun main event. Terrible writing. I'm sorry.
I can't disagree with that. I do want to pick up your point on...
I will say one thing, sorry, before. I do like how... No, I don't. They are bringing together a babyface squadron.
Yeah.
Right, bloodline at War Games. That's all well and good. Do it better.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. I think, have given credit to how Triple H used to kind of arrive at those babyfaces and heels.
Shockingly good at it.
Yeah, so we'll see how we get on with that. On heels that would rather do other things than wrestle, We'll put both of these two together because I think we have a certain emotional investment in this. The maximum male models want to bring home a title because they're mindful that Max Dupree is running out of patience with them. He's buzzing, obviously, because surely that means they're going to wrestle the Usos. No, it means they want to hold the title for longest ever pose held. We'll cobble these two together because it got way more fun in the second segment. So there, we go back to them later on in the show. I should point out, by the way, I think Hit Row came in and gave him the angry face after that, but we'll get to Hit Row in a second. Jesus Christ. So anyway, backstage we go again later on in the show to the Maximum Male Models who are going to break the record, but Max Dupree just breaks it off. And off comes the M belt that he's got and simply says, this was never for me. And is about to storm off and leaves with a...
Yeah.
Graves knocks out some bollocks about this being the, you know, the split that he's found it hard to take since the Rockers broke up once upon a time. But I'm not going to let him ruin what has been for us just there. I think the latest in the realisation of what LA Knight might have had all along, I feel a little bit sorry for Maximum Male Models because this is WWE. And even in Triple H's WWE, I sense that the comedy act are about to just get absolutely flushed so that he can salvage LA Knight. But salvaging is what he's doing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ironically, this is the first time I've thought, you know what, they can coexist. Just the Maximum Male Models and LA Knight do a show program before LA Knight does some, stuff in the mid-card. Yeah. And then Maximum Male Models can continue to do stupid bollocks because the stupid bollocks I find, in spite of myself, phenomenally entertaining. Actually, that's a complete and utter bit of hyperbole. Mildly amusing. I go like this.
Do you know what?
Nice, I guess.
Do you know what I think Maximum Male Models offer to the SmackDown Tag Division, Cedric? Much more than Hit Row and Los Lotharios combined.
Because this
mess came next. They had all of 3 minutes to work with, and me and Wilborn talked a bit about Hit Row on the preview. This is not a slight on them as individuals, and it's especially not a slight on the work of Ashanti the Adonis, but there's heavy lifting and then there's insurmountable odds. And Hit Row, over the course of a comeback that wasn't really asked for by the audience but was nonetheless received quite well, have then been given the, so last week's SmackDown were given the several backstage bits treatment, which is typically indicative of a company they're interested in. You're kind of being invested in, isn't it? Oh, back to Hit Row, what are they doing? All to set up this nothing fluff match, which otherwise would feel a waste, but you think, we have to invest in them. But the act is crap. The work looks rubbish. Fans are not engaged at all. And like, it's one thing for WWE audiences to be quiet. It's quite another for them not to be picking up the call and response cues and things like that. However many weeks in, I've lost count, but it's not that many, is the only answer here to turn these heel, because I don't even think this is the fault of the talent. I think Triple H has got the bit between his teeth about Hit Row and absolutely nobody else does. And when you've made this comparison before, this feels to me like this is him at his most Vince McMahon currently. I like Hit Row, so it's happening. I like we're doing it, because almost everything across Triple H's WWE to some degree feels like it's either connecting or people are finding it again and going, I'm going to give that some time. I want to feel good about this product, so That's working for me. That might work in 3 weeks. The LA Knight thing is probably a good example of that. This couldn't be further from that.
It's so weird because realistically, Hit Roll, they actually got a tiny bit of buzz, on NXT. Was it the Cypher that it was called?
Yeah, yeah.
And people were sort of shockingly sort of, this isn't the worst thing in the world sort of thing. That's how I would describe the level of praise directed towards it. There was certainly potential there. It was such a nice departure from the usual, like, black trunks, kick pads, we're going to have a fight, hard nose stuff that was going on at the time. And that was kind of it. There wasn't this huge sense that, you know, when people to this day still go on about, you know, the original incarnation of the Wyatt family could have been the biggest thing in WWE history and all that kind of stuff. That level of hyperbole was never applied to Hit Row. It was just something a bit different on NXT that kind of could have got over. Like NXT, like Triple H is treating it like this great lost sacred cow that was slaughtered that must be brought back, and no one gives a toss. I will say yes, the correct sensible thing to do at this point, because they're not connecting with babyface, not connecting as babyfaces, it's not going to happen. Neither are good enough to go on a singles run. They might as well just stay their course, be annoying on purpose for a few weeks and then turn heel, and you might have something else with them.
Dollar hot tag is absolutely desperate stuff.
Oh, it is. He's terrible. I'm saying the sensible thing to do would be to turn them heel if this doesn't catch on, and it just isn't going to. The selfish, perverse thing that I want them to do is to keep it going because it's bad and I find it funny. So, right, the match is nothing. It's a hot tag and it's a terrible one. Action Bronson can run the ropes better, which says something about the top dollar performer or the performance center, or why not both, which is the theme of this podcast. He just runs stupid. It's funny. His actual moves look dire. That elbow drop is ridiculous. It's like he's smashing himself back first on the mat, and then his arm just kind of sticks out a little bit. Drive it in there, you useless tit. I had to rewind this about 10 times. It's the funniest thing. I showed it to Murray in the office. I would recommend anyone listening to this podcast, once you finish the podcast, and just look it up easy as you like on YouTube. You don't have to go on your DVR or whatever, right? Watch Top Dollar as he does that move to two people, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
When he does who better than Top Dollar? And then people are meant to say, not Nada, and Michael Cole's the only one doing it. He kind of can't even do his catchphrase, which is funny because if there's one thing you can learn, it's a catchphrase. Christ, even I can do that on a podcast. And he kind of does the Undertaker eyes as he's about to put them both on the mat. And it's the funniest thing. He looks like an idiot and no control of himself whatsoever. I'll show you after this. Go and watch it. Go and watch Top Dollar Be Useless. It is priceless.
Do you think he's just starting to embrace his role as the locker room leader? You remember when he was the gatekeeper of WWE, like, Hall of Fame kit when he was on that show? He was bullying. Was it like Sonny Ono or something? He was like, no, you should give that over to WWE. Belongs in the
like that.
Belongs in a Hall of Fame that doesn't exist. So
yeah, he bought it.
Yeah.
He's such a tit. Anyway, I'd like watching him not do good things. So I would like to keep them, just do this all the time. It's great.
I have no segue to the next thing we've got, because we'll do the match and the angle here. Another short match to make a point that didn't really need making, in truth. Ronda Rousey made fairly light work of Natalya. This wasn't bad. Like, this was physical. They've got that, like we know that Natalya helped, like, Rousey get WWE ready a few years ago, and it's probably a match that they've had 1,000 times, and it didn't really, like,
it's not Natalya 1,000 times at this point, it seems.
Yeah. It didn't explore anything too new, but like the work was solid enough. But the main thing really existed was for Natalya to take the loss, and Liv Morgan with her baseball bat that she said will be one of the many equalizers she got as a result of the Extreme Rules stipulation at the premium live event on Saturday. They get physical with one another. Rousey chucks her over the table. Security try and get Rousey away. Liv's charging at her. The bat isn't used yet, but you sense, because it's like, it's all decorative and very much made like Liv Morgan, it feels like it's going to come into play now in Extreme Rules itself. And they had the love that visual of like, especially when you're trying to get over someone like a Liv Morgan. Like, do you believe that she could really fight the world at this point? Well, we've got to look, we've got to make it look that way by stopping it. So it's Liv Morgan trying to fight through just a mass of bodies to get to Rousey. And obviously Rousey wants to get to Liv. They've done this with Rousey before. You know, if you think about like that epic police beatdown showdown with Charlotte and Becky. But the key difference to that and other examples is that you've really got to buy the babyface in that role. You've got to imagine that if only those people weren't there, this babyface would come out swinging. And this could just be a subjective take of mine. I don't know. But I just think that, like, that ship has sailed with Liv Morgan. And I felt like I was more watching the theatre that they put on to make me think a thing than actually making me feel a thing.
I think it's terrible booking yet again, connected to Liv Morgan here. Like, the optics are terrible. Like, you've got this heel ostensibly in the narrative in Ronda Rousey, who, as you said, makes light work of veteran presence, taps her out clean as a sheet right in the middle of the ring. And then you've got the babyface saying, well, I'm no match for your expert in-ring acumen and skill, so I've got loads of weapons. Like, terrible. Mm. Absolutely terrible stuff. She just looks like useless. And she looks like she's useless in comparison to the far more skilled in-ring performer. She looks desperate. She looks, in short, not a thing like a baby face. As for the quality of the match, I didn't think it was really there. Like, they've tried this before and it didn't work then, so why the hell would you do it again? Natalya and Ronda Rousey cannot do a worked MMA match to save their lives, in my opinion. Some of the, you're meant to feel as this thing oscillates hold for hold that if you're not ridiculously quick on the defensive, you're going to get a limb broken. And you can go through link upon link upon link of a chain of offense, if you like, a ZSJ, to make it seem like, right, that one that I was going to attempt, that's not even working because he's got the guard ready. So I'll just quickly transition into something else. This was so trickly and just not good. I mean, it might be realistic, but not the good kind of pro wrestling realistic, if that makes any sense. And there was a bit where they're trying to do this kind of worked MMA match, at least WWE's not particularly undiluted version of it. And Natalya does this thing where she's about to register, locking in the sharpshooter, and that gives Ronda Rousey obviously more than enough time to counter it with a knee bar or whatever she was doing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, don't do your submission theatrics in this kind of match because you were made to look like a tit, and you were not for me, any of this at all.
I always find, to that point, I always find that when I'm not an MMA fan, right? I'm a wrestling fan. And one of the reasons is because as somebody with an untrained eye, when I'm watching MMA, all I'm seeing is a whole lot of nothing. But that's because the fighters can't give an inch. You cannot give so much as a least finger or a toe or whatever, because if the other person gets that, then you could be in trouble. I don't know how that trouble happens, but I'm aware that that's a lot of what's going on. It's this.
I sometimes see the commentary and they go, don't do that, don't do that. He's going to do that. It's like, do what?
Yeah. There, to your point, is the exact example of that, isn't it? Like, they're not going to look out, like, if they see a free elbow, they're not going to check with the fan, shall I get him?
And shall then I get him?
Got the free elbow, because these are the two different disciplines playing out.
You ready for my sharpshooter? Hey, hey. Don't do that.
To moving on to what I thought was a tremendous bit of business here, and to call back on a point you were making previously about how the circumstances can sometimes give people excuses for bad booking or for lazy booking or whatever. We go to Imperium and Sheamus, not the Brawling Brutes, because Ridge Fridge and Pete Dunne are unable to attend because of the hurricane. So Sheamus all alone. Now they're promoting the rematch from Clash at the Castle for this Friday SmackDown. I thought it was actually on the SmackDown following Extreme Rules, which does feel like it's taking the steam out of the six man, the Donnybrook Extreme Rules. Feels like it's taking the steam out of that a little bit by having the singles match first, because that's the singles match we want. But either way, it's almost definitely going to main event on SmackDown's season premiere next week. And Sheamus was all alone, but he brought an equalizer. Bit of a tribute to Finlay, of course. He's got the shillelagh there. So we get the fight. That kind of goes as you would predict. He takes out Ludwig Kaiser and he takes out Giovanni Vinci. But Gunther wants to go man-to-man. And because Sheamus is the babyface and believes he can, he does. But because Gunther is the heel, in then comes Imperium again, and they dish out a beatdown, which I imagine you absolutely loved for how it paid loving tribute to how vicious the Clash match was. And I just thought, Like, you just like to see these segments laid out like this. The babyface behaved as a babyface would. The heel behaved as a heel would. But by the way, like, the heel can absolutely kick the shit out of you and got the opportunity to, even if he decided to wait until the odds were in his favour.
This is fantastic. Absolutely great. I could not have thought more of Sheamus. They've done an absolutely spectacular job with Sheamus since Triple H took over. Made you think maybe he worked him at WrestleMania 26 because he did actually see something in him. Can't beat me, but you know, he can work with me, which is just as good.
Not just doing reps in the gym together. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. So I think like he's booked Sheamus to perfection. It's been fantastic. The clash match was great. Just Sheamus doing the whole bit trite, but I loved it nonetheless. Is that all you got? Stuff was great. Again, great babyface work. And I've got a complaint about it because, of course, I do. Like, how can you book the Liv Morgan thing and then this on the same show and not realize what the problem is? What differentiates the two performers in terms of how they've connected with crowds and how one of them really drastically hasn't? So that was stupid that they did both of these things on the same show and expected a similar response, I think. But regardless, Gunther's just so scary. Sheamus is just so spirited. This is just what you want from professional wrestling. I would have let them a million times go, "I'm wrestling now," on the same show if this is what the wrestling on the show looks like.
Well, right. It's funny you mention doing the same thing on the same show in relation to Rousey and Natalya, because I thought they found themselves in a bit of an awkward spot with what came next. Bayley, the heel, didn't have her friends with her because of the hurricane.
Yes.
So it was a bit odd having Bayley then having to play this a different way. I don't think this was a failure by any means, but I just thought it was slightly awkward that you had these two things wedged next to each other when we've just used this difficult situation to get a babyface over. Now what you've got is Bayley basically just having to be a way more experienced and better wrestler than Shotzi Blackheart. Shotzi's got a tank back, which is generates a big reaction from the crowd and the commentary and certainly everybody online, because tanks don't give a shit, and we should never forget about that. Look, this is no different to me personally than when a wrestler gets their name back, and I fully expect Shotzi to be Shotzi Blackheart any day now, and Austin Theory and Tommaso Ciampa and whatever. I am not going to do backflips over some things Triple H does, but this one doesn't. I'm not as high on this because really there are just some things that Vince McMahon should have never have done in the first place, and he was weird to do so.
Yeah.
So coming back is great, but why was a tank ever put in storage in the first place? It's a cool thing. Like, why was Vince McMahon thinking somebody riding a tank to ringside wasn't fun?
Yeah.
What's gone wrong in his brain? You know, the guy that made this Raw when we were kids. Anyway, the match isn't bad. It's substantially better than your sort of your typical SmackDown Women's Division match, because the quality rate has been through the floor for the last 6 months, and you see what happens when Bayley comes in. And ultimately, look, this is a WWE developmental problem. You've got to put people that still need the reps and still need the work in with somebody with a bit more experience. And Bayley at the moment seems like she's just basically got to be that. It was far from perfect because Shotzi has a style. I don't know, like, is that a generous way to put it? Sometimes it's so...
That's how the commentators did it, to get away from how bad she is.
Yeah, sometimes the recklessness, and I think more on NXT than it ever was on the main roster, sometimes the recklessness is quite dynamic, and there's a bit of an edge to the matches. But when she's in there with a professional that's just trying to get, like, a gentlewoman's three out of her, it sort of veers off and it goes off the rails a little bit. But Bayley was never really not in charge. She gets a win with the rose plant. And then after the match, and by the way, I should point out as well that, like, there was obviously Shotzi's recently had, like, these babyface acquaintances. But there were a number of people. The injury bug must have bitten again with them in Canada that were unable to make So Shotzi was pretty much going it alone this week. But then when Bayley, after the match, decided to get out a ladder to use against her, of all the weapons to choose, Bianca Belair runs in for the save and Bayley bails. That again, based on who was absent, felt like it was very much a delaying tactic, and they went with the quickest WWE insta finish that they could, which is wrestler uses weapon that they're going to use at the premium live event. Like, not a lot really. I don't think, I've said this before, I've got a lot of faith in the Belair Bayley match, but I don't think Triple H is getting anywhere near enough the grief for this failure to tell a particularly good story here.
No, I did like in the post-match the way that Bianca, because she's so good at projecting what she does and telling her stories, that the reversal and the way she registered the fact that the crowd were like, oh, we're going to see the Kiss of Death. We're going to see the KOD. Like, she's just so good at building the anticipation for our big spots. This match was useless. I must have been paying attention to much of SmackDown for the past 6 months, because if this is significantly better than anything that's happened on there, Jesus, I'd be missing out on some Schadenfreude. Christ almighty. When the commentary team has to incredulously talk around the fact that one of the wrestlers involved is not very good, and just, this is a match of euphemisms, this. Oh, you know, she's got an unorthodox style. You can't really strategize for it because no one ever wrestles like that, because she's quite competent at their craft. Look, I know Shotzi's got an appeal. Doesn't work on this kind of stage, I don't think. It's like, if you see Shotzi on the indies, it's like, oh, Christ, it's not the best match I've ever seen by half, but she might come and do a suicide dive, like right past my face or something, and I'm got to get out of the way, and it's a bit of a chaotic. It just doesn't work in this context whatsoever. She threw a drop kick in this match where I'm thinking, don't sell for that, Bailey. Absolutely do not sell for that. You're not embarrassing yourself by... You shouldn't sell for that under any circumstances, because it didn't hit you. It didn't hit you. It's anything where... That old RVD story where they just wouldn't sell for his kicks when he went to Japan for his first tour and they just leathered him. He's like, oh, you're a bit hard on us. He's like, yeah, I'm not selling for that. Just kick us. I prefer to get kicked than to be like embarrassed by being made to sell for like really flimsy offense. Yeah, I know. It's one isolated spot, and it wasn't the worst Shotzi match, because I've seen some terrible ones. But yeah, what do you do? Oh, send it back to the performance center. No, because they can't really train people. So there's no end in sight to this.
No, I think there's like Raw less so, maybe on numbers alone, but I think there's major, major problems in the SmackDown Women's Division that aren't going to be addressed, by the way, by Ronda Rousey regaining the title. Like, you would anticipate her and possibly Shayna Baszler go on just a dominant run on this, but like, look at the standard. It's not going to feel dominant if they're just battering these people that don't feel on their level. Yeah. I don't know the answer. Desperately needs an injection of significant talent, but it can't just be numbers. It can't just be the quantity of people. Like, it is in bad need of a quality upgrade as well.
Oh, yeah. Main event time?
Main event time. Main event time. As set up earlier on the show, it's a six-man tag that was set up before. Drew McIntyre, Johnny Gargano, and Kevin Owens versus Alpha Academy and Austin Theory. This was really good stuff at points. If you were able to direct your attention from Michael Cole taking the piss with the deep dive references. This week it was Evolve, referencing it was McIntyre and Gargano. He is doing this on purpose now, because I think he must have become hooked on the online praise. I can't even remember the one it was that he name checked the Stardom Act when Damage Katarl were doing the Trios offense. And he name checked a Stardom offense, and I think he's got high on his own supply at this point, because he's just sitting there reciting notes that somebody else has got for him, and like, Evolve, what the hell's that? And it's like, it's something that's on our network, Michael. All right, okay, fine, I'll mention that. But you get those little moments between McIntyre and Gargano. You also get moments between Gargano and Owens, because they're clearly developing something. As you pointed out, it does feel like babyface is all coming together at just the right time to start making it feel organic when it hits Survivor Series season and there's a War Games match to promote. Gable, as usual, is just tremendous. He is wrestling like a man that is sniffing out like the first realistic chance he's ever got at a proper singles push in this company, because he is using these tag matches, of which he is coming out on the losing end most weeks, to elevate his partner, to elevate his act, and indeed to elevate himself. There was just some absolute tremendous, like wicked strikes and wicked suplexes. You cannot get bored of them when the right people in there, such as a Kevin Owens or a big guy like Drew McIntyre, bump for you. And you show your, like, the gorgeous form, the arch of the suplexes. I think he's having, like, low-key one of the, like, sort of the breakout years of the wrestlers that have shone under Triple H. It might not look it in terms of results or pushes for right now, but he's potentially mortgaging his future the way he's working at the moment. And I just thought that was, like, he was the standout yet again in what was otherwise, like, just a really fun house show special, a WWE house show special transposed onto television. I think as a show, SmackDown is out of juice for the Extreme Rules build, but if you have to do something, there are worse things to do than this.
Yeah, absolutely. I always am impressed, and it was something similar to Jericho versus Bandido, when a show goes out of its way to make me hate it or make me hate something with a stupid fake setup, And when it arrives, something that's ostensibly very good, like this match was, and it's like, oh, what's the point? I hate it now. Because the writing is absolutely terrible. I'll never not point it out. And then it happens, and it's really fun.
Yeah.
I was in a mood. I was prepared to not like this because I was put into a bad mood, because it's all about the mood you get put in. It's all about, I've seen, I'm 37, the amount of quote-unquote good matches I've seen. Like, I have no conception whatsoever about certain reviewers, certain fans, and it's fine. I honestly wish I was more like this. Who go, great match. How, you're made to not really care about it. How can you give a toss about a great match? It has to be more. For me, it has to be more. And then this was so much fun that I thought, you know what, I'm just going to stop being a boring bastard and get into it. Tell you what I did like, because, you know, the spots are in the right place. Kevin Owens is really good. Chad Gable's stuff on the outside looked positively vicious. I like how they kind of production botched the finish because it looked absolutely frenetic. Like, yeah, it could barely be caught because it was so fast-paced. I like a little bit of wonkiness in my wrestling. WWE has completely spent the last decade, or century rather, stripping all of that away, this ironic quest for perfection. When they don't capture everything and it's all a bit chaotic, good. It's meant to feel full of life. It's meant to feel like it's not the stilted thing for the cameras to catch. So I enjoyed the last minute, and I saw the reviewers that I hate. One day they'll get name and shame, but I can't be asked for the political blowback at the minute. They'll name and shame. Missed the finish. Good. It means that was kind of out of control and frenetic and lively and fun and realistic and all the rest of it. Like, God damn it. Everything has to be produced within an inch of its life. I hate it. I'm going to start burying them soon.
The reference point I always go to for that, for that specific example of how that sort of that lack of production genuinely helps from reviewing experience, and this is a lofty comparison, which very little can live up to it, is the Dallas 10 man, where no matter from the year 2000 on Monday Night Raw, where no matter where the camera is,
sounds like a chair shot, but it's the other way around.
There's pops, the camera's on something and it's not popping in time. The crowd aren't popping in time with what you're watching because they're popping at something else.
Yeah.
Five individual mini brawls that are all electrifying in their own way. And the closest I've ever seen wrestling come to that is Anarchy in the Arena. And how much was that celebrated for what you couldn't see as much as what you could?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's something to definitely aspire to when you've got confidence in your wrestlers and confidence in your action to speak for itself. So I certainly have no problem with that. And I too would like those reviewers to be slightly more discerning. Would you like them to be more discerning too? Why not let us know about that in the reply to this tweet that will be going out shortly when we've got this podcast uploaded, if indeed we can today. We thank you for staying patient with our technical issues that might continue for the rest of like the next couple of days, but obviously hopefully all be sorted at Walkout Studios soon. If they want to try and needle you, Sidgwick, for who these bad faith people are, where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm not going to give it up. At M Sidgwick.
I am at Michael Hamford. There'll be more podcasts coming, including the Raw preview, which will be coming your way later today. And until then, we will see you soon.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.